It's a pleasure to have you listening to my show today. My sincerest desire is for you to get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and in this time of coronavirus pandemic, safer. I am Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. Freedom from Addiction, Share Your Mission is the longest running, single-hosted and produced, spiritually based radio internet talk show in the country. It has been continuously running for the last 20 years, plus a little bit. I introduce you to celebrities and non-celebrities alike who have something to say about the disease of addiction in its 30-plus different forms and about the importance of finding your mission or purpose in life and then acting on it. And more recently, I have been getting, as an investigative journalist, into bringing you truth just below the surface. So today we're going to talk with Larry Duchin. His book is called A Book on Fear, and I know that fear is an emotion that everybody that's listening to me today has probably had in the last 24 hours, or in the last week for sure. The subtitle is Feeling Safe in a Challenging World. And if this isn't a challenging world, I don't know what is. Too often we're preoccupied with the past and the future, treading over memories and worries with no real solution or plan. In these states of mind, fear can take over. By increasing our awareness of our own thoughts, we can pull our attention back to the present, reconnect with our hearts, and free ourselves of fear's grip. We're living in a time marked by intense uncertainty. It's easy to get trapped in a vortex of bad news and endless concerns. But in that state, we're never okay, and we can never solve our problems. We need to connect with our hearts in the now to tap into our strength and resilience. Our guest today is Lawrence Duchin. Larry is an author, entrepreneur, and devoted husband and father. He's a survivor of harrowing childhood sexual abuse. He traveled a long journey of emotional and spiritual healing and developed an in-depth understanding of how our beliefs create our reality. In the business world, he has worked for or been associated with enterprises from small startups to multinational corporations. He is the co-founder of Huso Sound Therapy, which delivers powerful healing benefits to individuals and professionals worldwide. In everything Larry does, he strives to serve a higher good. And this new book is an example of that. It's entitled A Book on Fear, Feeling Safe in a Challenged World. Larry, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Wynn. Thank you so much for having me.
So give us a little background. Why did you write a book on fear?
Well, I don't think anybody, you know, in the preface of the book, I mentioned that I'm kind of an expert on fear. I don't know that anybody really sets out to be an expert on fear. That's not a subject that you probably would want to do. You might want to be an expert on brain surgery or something like that. But, you know, life brings us circumstances and we have to deal with it. And so, you know, my circumstances started really with sexual abuse by my mother when I was going through puberty. So that significant effect on me in many ways. I came out of that experience with a lot of trauma, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of anger, depression, and certainly fear, and also a need to control things. And so in my 20s, I was a very angry and depressed and fearful person. And then when I entered into my early 30s, I came upon what I call basically an emotional healing path and also a spiritual path. And for me, really, those are the same path. But anyway, I started to work through all of that trauma, and in doing so, I encountered a lot of fear. And certainly, my book is a compilation of a lot of just a very broad perspective of a number of things, and certainly strategies to get out of fear.
Well, Larry, fears can be different in different people. And I would imagine that as a result of that early sexual thing with your mother, that you felt out of control in that situation, and that was the cause of that fear. Is that right?
Yes, for sure. One of the things that, in the first chapter of the book, I talk about how fear, one of the first things we have to do before we can fix something is we have to determine what it is that needs fixing. So with fear, a lot of our fears are hidden, and we have to determine what those hidden fears are so that we can then begin to address them. And certainly, I think with abuse survivors, especially sexual abuse survivors, one of those hidden fears is a need to control, because that's what we feel will keep us safe. So certainly that's the case of what you mentioned.
Right. So everybody that's listening today has fears, and they're all different, although there are probably some common fears because of this pandemic. But what do you say about the word fear? I know that you've probably thought about that a lot. Tell me your thoughts on fear itself.
Well, fear is, everything in the universe has been shown by science to be energy. And so fear is just an energy. We use labels and we attach certain belief systems to those labels. So certainly with fear, we've attached a certain belief system to it. And that's when we say fear, a lot of times for most people, that's a contracting energy. Whereas opposed to if we say gratitude or compassion, that is that's an enlarging, opening energy. And certainly you can feel this in your body. If you think about something that you're fearful for, you will feel that contraction. Then if you think about something that you're grateful for, you'll feel that energy opening. But fear, I have a strong belief that everything in the universe wants to return to a state of wholeness and remembrance. And so fear is no different. Fear is coming up within us to be addressed and to be transformed and transmuted.
I would say that a fearful person is a negative person, that when you start thinking about your fears and everything, your personality and your thoughts change, and that how that's affecting your body and your mind and your soul is different than when you're in a state of love or gratitude. Why the difference in people? Why the negativity in some and the positivity in others?
Well, the way that the process works is that it's designed to benefit us, but it can also work the other way. So when we feel grateful, we are energizing what I call our natural, God-given energetic pathways in the body, that we're supposed to live in this state of gratitude and joy and love. And so, and that feeds on itself in a positive loop way. But the opposite is that when we're in a fearful state, it also feeds on itself, but in a negative loop way. And so we continue, when we're fearful, then we have thoughts that go off in a wide number of different directions of all these different scenarios that could happen. And that is energizing a part that we don't want to energize. And so we go down this slippery slope of this downward cycle, and then it's accentuated by all the media and the news and things like that. And so, you know, one thing that we need to do is stop watching the news or watch it in the very limited capacity enough to be informed, but drop out of that negative loop that we get into with fear.
It seems to me that the media, for whatever reason or reasons, is daily trying to make everybody that listens to them fearful. And I think that part of that issue is a control issue. If you have people that are fearful, you can control their actions, thoughts, and that gets to be a very dangerous thing that we've got going on right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I completely agree with you. So we have to, what people have to do is they have to drop out of herd mentality and, like Jesus said, be in the world but not of it. And that's not an easy task. I mean, but that's where your joy and peace and safety, especially your safety, lie. And so if you drop out of herd mentality, then you'll begin to see things in a much different way than you were seeing before. And you can see how, you know, you were part of this fear mentality and what it was doing to you in so many ways.
Well, in the Bible, Jesus said, be anxious of nothing. We don't need to get into this fear mentality because it's not going to do us any good. And I was reading another author this morning, and he was talking about one of the things that he does that has made a big difference in his life. And that is that, and this is different from the way that I do it, but he said one day a month, he takes the whole day and just says things about gratitude and does things about gratitude. I take a few minutes every day in the morning and go over what I'm grateful for. And I know that that changes my whole perception of the day, just like I'm sure that is taking a full day out of the month to be grateful. It works for him. But I would strongly recommend gratitude as a principle that will make you healthier and be something that you can hold on to that's going to make your life better. And I would assume that you would say the same thing.
Certainly. There's one of my chapters in the book is on gratitude. And I'm more like you when in terms of my practice is, when I am in a meditative or prayer state in the morning before I get up and then before I go to bed. But also, I am bringing my attention back to gratitude many times throughout the day because we do live in a very hard times and we have a lot that's kind of assaulting us from many ways. And, you know, the gratitude, bringing our attention back to the gratitude constantly throughout the day helps us to kind of recalibrate. And especially for, I think this is the case for people that have been sexually abused or really have gone through a lot of abuse themselves in their childhood. They tend to come out of that experience with a victim mentality. And that was certainly the case for me. And so it's funny because my wife and a good friend of mine used to call me Eeyore, like from Winnie the Pooh, because I was always like looking at things, you know, from a negative standpoint. And I had to work very hard to reverse that. And I continue to have to work hard to reverse that and stay in a place of gratitude. And as you know, you're working it's like you're working a muscle when you go to the gym. You have to keep working it, and you got to keep working it, or it's going to go flabby. So that's what we're doing when we move into that space of gratitude. And you know, moving in a space of gratitude is not. You can take the smallest thing. We're all going to have hard days. We're all going to have days where we're feeling a lot of self-pity, but we can take the smallest thing, just that we're alive and breathing, and be grateful for that. And then that expands us into the next level, like, okay, I'm really grateful for my family or friends, you know, well, I'm really grateful that I have a job or whatever it is. So we just have to keep energizing that muscle.
I know that there are different levels of being grateful. This morning, I took chopped up breadcrumbs out to the birds in the neighborhood and put them on a table for them. I do that every day. I was thinking, I am really grateful that I have these birds that I can feed. And you wouldn't think that that was a big thing, but when you say something like mean it, it changes your perception of how the day's going to go.
It does. And you know, those birds are very grateful to you as well. So, you know, it's like we're connecting with parts of, you know, humanity and non-humans or whatever. And, you know, that gratitude is going back and forth.
Right. And to a small extent or to a large extent, it's improving the whole world.
Well, I think that I think we tend to classify like acts of service wrongly, because we tend to see acts of service like small and big. But I tend to believe that acts of service, maybe just saying a kind word to someone or smiling at somebody, is as powerful as something that would appear to be much grander scale. And especially when you do these things, and I think that a lot of the reason for that is because you're doing those things just because you want to make somebody else feel joyful, as opposed to there's a lot of service that's done because people want recognition for it. So, you know, I think God highly values humility. And when we do those acts of service, just, and nobody knows about it except us and that person and God, those are really powerful acts of service, even if they appear small.
Absolutely. So, in life, most of the people, to a certain degree, if not to a large degree, have fears about their success or failure. What would you say about fears relating to whether you consider yourself successful or a failure?
Well, we need to determine, one of the things that we have to see is that we've been conditioned by society. We've been conditioned in many ways. We've been conditioned by certainly how we grew up, by other caretakers, you know, our bosses, things like that, and definitely by society. And one of the ways we've been conditioned, especially in the U.S. and the Western world, is that we should achieve the American dream. And that's so, you know, that's a fairly nebulous concept, but it's somewhere around like, oh, I should have a lot of money and I should have a great career, be well known. I should have beautiful kids that go to amazing colleges. And so if we don't, and the underlying message to that is if we don't achieve that, we're not worthy. And so people, you know, are striving for something outside of themselves. Anytime you strive for something outside of yourselves, outside of yourself, you're going to have fear. But also, we need to recognize that American dream, or just the word success, is a very nebulous concept that we can never, when do we hit that? You know, when do we achieve that? Because it's nebulous, we don't necessarily achieve it. And so we're like the gerbil on the wheel in the cage that just keeps going and going without a destination, without knowing where we're going. And that's going to breed fear, because when you can't reach something you think you're supposed to achieve, you're going to be in fear.
I've heard many people at many different times say, I will be happy when. I will be happy when I get into college. I will be happy when I get a good job. I will be happy when I find a great person to marry, and on and on and on and on. And people are on that treadmill. I'm not happy now necessarily. I'll be happy in the future. And I think that's really a problem, because You have to live in the now. You have to somehow or the other be satisfied and happy with what you have now. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't consider.
I mean, I completely agree with you. You're always going to be win, you know, even when you achieve the win-if thing that you, you know, you think you achieve, you're going to substitute something else for that because you're looking outside yourself. And until you look inside yourself, you know, like Socrates said, know thyself. Jesus said, know thyself in various ways. And there's been plenty of very wise people that have said, know thyself. So you have to look inside yourself for the diamond that's within, and then you won't be looking outside yourself for anything. So, and then when you have things, you are grateful for them, you know, very grateful for them. And you, but you're also okay. If you're in a relationship, you're okay with that. If you're not in a relationship, you're going to be okay with that. I mean, I'm in a relationship. I'm in a long-term marriage. We have four amazing kids, and but my time with my wife and my children is amazing, and my time with myself alone is amazing, and I need both.
Well, you were talking about knowing yourself, but that doesn't help people understand how that comes about. Do you have a tip or two on how a person could better know themselves?
Sure. So the way that we see what our fears are, so we, you know, our fear, what's behind our fears is our beliefs. And so, for instance, and a lot of those are underlying and hidden. So for instance, somebody might know that they have a fear that they don't think they're ever going to have a significant other, but attached to that fear is a fear or a belief that maybe they don't feel they are worthy or that they're lovable. So the way that we determine what all of those fears and hidden beliefs are is to start watching our emotions and reactions. And Carl Jung, who is the father of analytical psychology, said that projection is one of the most common phenomenon. And so when we are, we're rarely angry for the reasons we think we are. Usually behind anger is guilt, is fear. We're often blaming others because we feel guilt inside of ourselves. We're often judging others because we have self-judgment. So we're projecting all of that out from ourselves, and we have to bring that projection back in, and we have to watch our, you know, emotions and reactions, and then say, oh, okay, where is that coming from inside me? Because it's not really about that other person or group. It's about something that is being triggered inside of me, and what is the belief in there? So once you start to shine awareness on these false beliefs, you're peeling an onion of these beliefs and fears, and you know, the light basically will start to dissolve those things. And as you do that, you will be increasingly in a more joyful and peaceful and loving state, because that is our natural state. It's the fears and the false beliefs that cover up all of the what's natural to us.
Well, I've been helping people for the last 30, 40 years on ridding themselves of addictive behaviors. And I found in that period of time that there's a single cause of addictive behaviors, and that's low self-esteem. And the low self-esteem comes from a couple of things, but it's a fear that you're not good enough, or that you're not lovable, or whatever. And so what I try to do is show people the way to increase their self-esteem, to increase the truth of the matter, which is that you're a very lovable person, you're a very wonderful, well-made person, which keeps them from going down the rabbit hole of addictions. And this ties in with what you're talking about, fears, and actually, fear is one of the multiple symptoms of addictive behavior. So I just wanted to bring up that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fantastic what you've been doing, and I agree with it completely. I think fear and self-judgment and low self-worth are all just one bundle. And so one of the things that I advocate in the book, and that's necessary for you to see that you are worthy and lovable, is to see how you got to the point where you believed that you were not. And so it's very helpful to look at our conditioning and say, oh, okay, that's what happened. You know, that's what came about from my childhood. I believe these things because my parents told me these things, or implicitly didn't tell me, but made me believe these things, or I had, you know, other experiences that happened. And then certainly, if we look at societal conditioning, society tells us, like, you need this product or you need this service to be healthy or to be whole or to be worthy, you know, or to keep up with the Joneses. So we're getting that from a lot of places. And if we can step out of that, that's what witnessing is. And that's what mindfulness is. And if we can step out of that and see, like, oh, that's how that happened, then we can start to unravel it. And then our natural love for ourselves and natural self-worth is there. So I think, yeah, what you said is exactly on.
It is really, when you talk about childhood experiences and how things come from your childhood, a parent who says something negative to their child lowers the child's self-esteem. And it takes, according to some people, at least 7 attaboys to make up for 1 harsh remark. And the parents don't generally come around with several praiseworthy things for their child. And so that child, over a period of time, comes to think that they're not good, that they're bad, that they're and they feel unloved and everything. And I think a great deal of how we develop is based on that.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. Obviously, if somebody is probably, you know, if somebody has said one statement, it's likely that they're saying that type of statement a lot. And so that's continually reinforced. It's almost like being in, you know, a type of prison and receiving this type of conditioning continually. And I've never heard like the 7 attaboys thing, but that's interesting. But it's likely that somebody saying that is not going to also be praising them, you know, at the same time. And the, like, analogy I use in the book is children are like sponges. But what if the sponge is soaking up polluted water? And so in a large number of cases, the sponge is soaking up polluted water. And when we get to adults, we've got to, you know, step back and take a look at that conditioning and say, okay, you know, I have compassion on them because maybe that's how they were conditioned or they went through abuse. My mother was sexually abused, but that's not me. That's not my identity. That's not who I am.
The thing about it is that being a good parent is a difficult job. There are some truths that you need to learn. And one of them is, don't cause your child to have a low self-esteem that will lead to an addictive behavior, and only you can do that. Another thing is that, like you said, on the sponges soaking up, children see and hear what you're doing and saying, and what you're actually doing is more important than what you tell them. In other words, if you tell them, I don't want you to smoke, and you smoke, that's just going to go in one ear here and out the other. You have to talk the talk, and if you're going to walk the walk, to make up for what you say. So what you do is terribly important.
Yeah, I think that if you're a parent, raising healthy, authentic children is one of the most important things you can do here on this earth.
That's right. It's a mission. It's a purpose that is undervalued a lot, I think. You don't have to do something that's really great to the extent that everybody in the world is praising you for it, because half the time, the world doesn't know what they're talking about.
That's probably, it's probably 95% of the time on that one.
Well, with respect to the pandemic, all you have to do is listen to the experts as they change their position from minute to minute. And you're going to be fearful because you know that they don't know. They're just guessing. And that's something that you have to get past. I think a good way to get past it is, as you say, turn off the television a little bit, because this fear is ruining our economy, is ruining our social interaction, it's ruining our religious ideas. So we're talking about fear. Fear is something that we don't want to have, and your book is very good at giving us some good ideas on how to take care of that problem. In fact, I was telling you earlier that I was really overly impressed with the ideas that you have in your book, and I have a yellow underliner, and I've underlined so much of it, and I highly recommend it for anybody, because I know that each person is fearful, and to have some good advice on what to do about fear will be really helpful. Why don't you tell us how they would get a copy of your book?
Sure. So you can order the book is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, like Apple, you know, all the online retailers. The easiest way to go is like go to my website, but and it's lawrenceduchin.com, so it's Lawrence DOOCHIN.com, but you can also go to abookonfear.com and it will forward to the website, and then from the website, like there's a link to click to go to the Amazon book purchase site, and then obviously if you want to purchase off of Barnes and Noble or Apple or wherever, you can find it by doing a search on those. And then I've also getting ready to post a number of I've written a number of articles that have been accepted in certain publications, different online publications, and so I'm getting ready to add a media tab that has a lot of those articles. It talks about releasing toxic expectations, just a number of different subjects that are touched on in the book in different ways, but maybe I expand on these in the articles, you know, with certain segues. So, but I really appreciate your having me on and having this discussion. It's been, I think we're in very much agreement in terms of how we see things.
Absolutely. You know, I could be fearful. I'm writing my 45th book right now, and I know that while I'm writing it, there are a million other authors writing a book. There's about a million books per year written, and I could be fearful as, well, if I write a book and a million other people are competitors, what share of the market am I going to get? But that would just make me feel bad most of the time. Or I could say, I'm grateful that I have the ability and the desire to help people by writing books, and it doesn't make any difference to me whether I make a dollar or not. So it's all a matter of how you think about things. You think about a glass half full or half empty, and you can take any fearful situation and turn it around, and that's why I think you and I would like to get people to rely less on fear and more on helping doing things for people, gratitude, concern, and things like that.
Yeah, I think what you said is an excellent perspective. You have to change your perspective. You have to move from, like, having your face up against the trunk of the tree, and you think, you know, that life is just like this bark of an oak tree, and then you move to the top of the tree, and then you're like, oh, wow, I'm, like, this is amazing. Look at all this other stuff I'm seeing, and I'm in a whole forest here. So, there's a lot of ways that you do that, definitely through, you know, through examining your fears and through, you know, spiritual means and just a number of things. And as you do that, then you'll be increasingly in less fear.
Well, like I said, I'm writing a new book. It's an edited update of a book that I currently have on addiction, which is called Freedom from Addiction 3. The new book will be called Freedom from Addiction 4. And I would highly recommend that you go to Amazon or someplace else and buy a copy of Freedom from Addiction 3. But if you're fearful that you're going to spend too much money, go ahead and get the one that's out now and then email me when the new book comes out, and I'll send you a free copy that you can find out what's changed since the last book. And my email is win@winhenderson.com. My podcast is freedomfromaddiction.libson, LIBSON.com. And you spell Libson with a B as in boy and a Y. No spaces, no capitalization. And, of course, it's a free podcast. And so I really enjoy talking to you today, Larry, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to each other in the future.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation as well. Thank you so much for having me on today.